Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 145 of the DevilKnit podcast. And it is December.
And greetings from gloomiest Seattle.
Yeah.
It is like peak gloom where like the sun never comes out and it just rains.
Deepest gloom.
All day.
Peak deepest gloom.
Yes. It's like, yeah. That's where Paddington is from, right? Deepest Peru, deepest gloom. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
November happened.
Yeah.
I had a vacation, so.
I had a vacation. Yours was a lot more exotic than mine. Yeah.
I went to Lisbon, Portugal, with my fam for Thanksgiving, where we didn't celebrate Thanksgiving, but apparently everyone celebrates Black Friday. I thought I was going to be able to, like, not have to participate or be around any of that.
I was reading someone else who was, like, in the Netherlands talking about, like, good night, talking about something Black Friday, and I'm like, how do you have Black Friday if you don't have Thanksgiving? I mean, not that Black Friday is necessarily, like, Thanksgiving. Anyway,
it's just traditionally.
It's proximity to the holidays.
That is what makes it happen.
Yeah, but.
Yeah.
That's strange. It feels
weird.
Yeah,
I didn't like it. I don't like Black Friday here. I don't like it there. I don't like it anywhere. It was very unpleasant. I tried to go walk around with my sister and Audrey, kind of in the lower shopping area, just to, like, walk around and see some stuff. It was just packed with shoppers. Yeah. And
probably a really good day to get into, like, museums and cathedrals, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, 2 days before we left, it was the day before we left, so we'd already kind of done that stuff. I'm like, let's just go walk around, and then it was miserable for me. I don't like that kind of scene, so. Yeah. But the rest of the trip was great. Recommend Portugal.
Someone else in my Instagram feed was just there as well, and I was talking to Karen at Knitting the other night, and she's been there in the last year.
Yeah, it was, like, 20 degrees warmer than it is here, which is, I'll take it. It only rained one day, also I'll take it. And I love fish, so if you hate fish, it might be, you'd still be able to find stuff to eat. Just, you wouldn't be able to eat a lot of their, like, traditional food, grilled sardines or canned sardines.
Yes.
Or sardine croquettes or cod croquettes. Or cuttlefish and ink croquettes, which were my favorite, and they're black. So, yeah, it was great. Also not great if you have mobility issues, I'll say that. Because everything is cobbled. I slipped and fell and bit it really hard, like the one day it rained, because we were on a steep hill, and my feet just, like, went right out from under me. And, if there's not a whole lot of accessibility.
Yeah.
So, or if you have kids that need strollers, because those people were struggling.
Yeah.
So, those are my two kind of caveats about traveling to Portugal. Because it's a lot of stairs, a lot of cobbles, a lot of slick surfaces, and Lisbon is very hilly, just like it is here. So.
Do they have, like, is it in Lisbon? Do they have a funicular?
There are, like, funiculars and trams.
And then there's, like, an
elevator. And buses. And then there are public elevators.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'll take you from one level of the city to the other. Okay. So, it's kind of weird. Like, the one that was nearest to us. Like, there's, like, a big ornate one down in that kind of shopping area that we didn't do because the line was, like, an hour long. And I'm like, it's just an elevator.
But it's the elevator.
It's the elevator.
It's the one you're supposed to do.
Yeah. But the other one that we used in between where our apartment was and kind of getting to the metro and stuff was, like, it just looks like a building and you go in and it's like a big bank of elevators and that's all. And it's open from, like, 7 a.m. to, like, 2 a.m. or something like that.
Cool.
So, yeah, recommend it. Liked it. Saw lots of tiles, ate lots of fish, walked around, bought lots of wool things.
I went to Fort Worden, so not quite as exotic. Also not very accessible if you have mobility issues.
Yeah.
Tried so hard this year. I was going to be so good at the stash sale, because last year I was mortified to come home and discover that I had purchased 14,500 yards of yarn. So this year my rule was, like, no fingering weight yarn. None. And I was so good. And I got home and I had just one bag of yarn. And I was like, I mean, It's my big bag, but I was like, okay, I was so good, logged it all into Ravelry, and I still had almost 11,000 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying so hard. I was so good.
I think unless you have a giant bag full of bulky weight yarn, like, it's just going to add up like that.
It was very, I tried so hard, but anyway.
Yeah. Let's talk about knitting. What have you been working on?
Well, let's see. I had something I've had in my head that I wanted to try for the longest time, and finally did, which was a woven scarf with plant with pooling to play with pooling. Because Liz Gibson, who I believe used to work for Shocked, she goes by the moniker Yarn Worker on Instagram. And also has a website, which is yarnworker.com. She does online weaving courses, but she was doing a free weave-along, which I believe is still accessible, that was sort of an exploration of three different ways to use a variegated yarn on a rigid head of loom. And one was the pooling mm-hmm. technique. So then I finally, like, you know me, it's like I really like to watch someone do something before I try it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just watched her little intro video, and it's not a full, like, you have to know how to use a rigid head of loom. It's not a full course. It's more just like she introduces you to some ideas and some tips and tricks and gives you some,
just for like intermediate people who already have experience. Someone who's
already used a rigid head of loom. I mean, obviously you have to own one to do the online course right. for it anyway. Yeah, so I tried it. So I had just gotten home from Fort Worden, and I had gotten, from my friend Morgan, I'd gotten a set of yarns that were from a Swell yarn shop they used to do, I don't think they exist anymore, but they used to do duets was their big thing, where it'd be a variegated and then a smaller skein for like heels and toes.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do a lot of fingering, but this one was a DK duet. So, I used just the variegated for the warp, and it came out really nicely. I did a really, really wide, like my weft is like really spaced apart, because I really wanted to see the warp. I'm like, maybe pushed it like a little further than I should have. Like, I think if you tug at it one way or another, things are going to move around a little bit. I still need to give it a good pressing, but I was pretty pleased with it, and I pulled it out of my bag to knot the fringes at a knitting group, and someone from the other end of the table like stopped her conversation and was like, "What is that?" So I was like, "Oh, this must be nice, because it turned out well." And then I have enough yarn left that I also, one of the other techniques she talks about is doing a clasped warp technique, and the rest of the duet, the solid and the rest of the variegated, should be enough to do a second scarf.
Oh, cool.
But I have to figure out what to do for the weft yarn, because the stuff that I used for mine, which was just some random unlabeled wool, I don't have enough of that to do a second scarf, so I have to find something else to do for that. But that was fun to try. You know, I mean, there's not like a lot to it. You just sort of warp your rigid head like you normally would, but and kind of fiddle around to make the colors line up. Mm-hmm. And you need a regularly dyed skein of yarn to be able to make that happen. So, it was fun. And I haven't done anything on my rigid heddle in a really long time. For our alphabet knit along last month, I did a hat called Up North, which is a Susan Ashcroft pattern. It's just a, mosaic, two color pattern that was, I used, skein of Steadfast fiber in a lime green, and then a crayon skein. I took a terrible picture that I shared online where you can't see that the crayon actually like shades from like a deep plum to a gray.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of all looked kind of brownish. Terrible picture of it. But it reminded me for the 8 millionth time that I really don't like knitting slip stitch patterns. I don't know why. They just annoy me. And it, like, the tension is always really funky on slip stitch. You know, like, those stitches that you're slipping just keep getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And I don't know. It's like I was just like, I would have rather stranded this pattern than having to slip them.
They get, like, compressed width-wise, and then it makes them, like, get longer. But they're also tight a little bit.
Yeah, they just don't have any stretch. I mean, not like stranded colorwork has a lot of stretch to it either, but it just makes a really unyielding fabric that, I don't know. Anyway, I mean, I did it, but I was, like, glad when it was over.
Patterns. I just finished that trove sweater that's, like, all stripes. Yeah.
And then, but the big news thing that I finished was that I finally finished my super bulky blanket. And I just like sucked it up and finished putting the whole thing together. I didn't do any kind of edging on it. I finally wove in all the ends, which took forever. And I still need to block it too, but it probably is about 10 pounds. It's like one of those like therapy blankets.
The weighted blanket.
Yeah. But it's probably also close to about, I don't know, 4,000 yards of yarn.
Holy that's a lot.
It's a lot. And everything in it was either hand dyed or hand spun. And in some cases, both, not always by me. I have some of, a friend's hand spun in there from when she had, she could no longer knit. She was going to give all her hand spun to Goodwill. And I was like, no, you're not. I'm taking it. But most of the yarns are yarns that I've gotten over the years at the stash sale at Fort Worden and then dyed. So it's just a really, really, really improvised log cabin thing. All the squares are different. And then I just did like a, basically like a slip stitch crochet join to put the whole thing together because I just couldn't get my head around like, how am I going to do this? And since it's so improvised, like, and it's log cabin squares, sometimes it's like you've got like, you know, a couple of inches of ridges and then, you know, a couple of inches where it was like the bind off edge. And then like, you know, it's like, and then like ridges again, or like, and then you're joining it to something that maybe was like all bind off edge or, you know, all ridges or whatever, you know? So it's like, it doesn't, there was never anything regular to it. It was never like, I'm joining 32 rows to 32 rows. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm joining this thing that's about 12 inches to this other thing that's maybe hopefully also about 12 inches. Mm-hmm. But so the crochet was very forgiving because you could just go like, gonna skip a few rows and grab this thing over here and just whack the whole thing together. Anyway, but very glad to be able to say that that's done. But I was going to, I need to wash it, and I was going to use my younger son's bed to block it on, but he's about to come home for winter break.
Oh.
So I can't do it now. So it's still just sitting there waiting. Something else that I finished was escarpment, which is a little, one of those little like scowls, the little, it's like a triangle shawl, but you join it in the round.
Bandana cowl.
A little bandana cowl thing. I did it in a single skein of knitted wid DK, and I might have been that more yarn. I think it was more yarn that I got at Oregon Flock and Fiber this year. So I was feeling kind of proud of myself. It definitely has been a focus of mine to use up more of my knitted wit yarn because I have a lot of it. I always get it and then I don't knit with it. And then my Sincere Sheep and my Black Trillium, like, shout out to my friends who make yarn.
Brook of Sincere Sheep just released a couple of new yarn bases. Yeah, one of them is great. Eureka DK. I can't remember what the other one is, but I'm like, oh, it looks so squishy.
Yeah, they all look beautiful. Yeah. Let's see. I also did, so one of the things I got at the stash sale was a lace weight Mongolian cashmere that all of my friends were like, I don't want it. It doesn't feel soft. And I'm like, well, it's got all the spinning oil in it. You know, it's kind of crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
I did the thing this year where I brought a big basket of hats to work. And my boss, he has alopecia, so he's fully bald.
Uh-huh.
And he took home this crazy colorful hat, which I would not have picked up for him in a million years. But he can't stop raving about how much he loves it. So I took four strands of the cashmere lace weight and knit a hat for him. And then washed it and dried it and washed it and dried it and washed it and dried it and like just beat the snot out of it. And it got really soft and really nice. Although it has kind of a weird smell to it that I can't seem to quite get rid of. I haven't given that to him yet, but I'll give that to him for Christmas. I also knit the Free For All cowl, which is a free pattern from Webster Street Knittery. That's a really simple You do a provisional cast on, and then you do this little chevron that's just like a garter ridge and some stockinette, and then like a garter ridge with an eyelet, and then another garter ridge. And so it's just really like it's a 10-row pattern, I think. And I did it in a skein of knitted wit worsted that I got, I think, last year at Oregon Flock and Fireworks. I'm trying to work. Oh, no, no, no. It was, sorry, I lie. It was knitted wit Targi worsted that I bought at Madrona, I think, a couple of years ago in her colorway American Samoa. That's one of the problems with the stuff that I get from her at Oregon Flock and Fiber. It's from her big, like, buy it by the ounce, and none of it's labeled.
Oh.
So you don't have colorways. You're not even 100% sure which base is which. So this, I did know what it was. So I just finished that the other night, and now I'm back to working on my custom fit sweater, which I never do this, but I like said at knitting the other day, like I am saying in front of all of you people that I'm going to finish this sweater by the end of the year, because I was going great guns on it. I finished the back, I started a sleeve, and then I set it aside and did a bunch of other things. So back to this now, focused.
What yarn is that?
This is my Millspun.
Oh, from the, okay. Abundant Your secret Millspun?
It's not secret anymore. It was Abundant Earth, because she's making yarn for everybody now. Anybody who wants to get yarn can get yarn. And this was a Targi fleece that I got years ago at Oregon Flock and Fiber, and a little bit of baby alpaca, and then she added some merino to it as well. So it's a nice, like, kind of creamy color. And
so if you don't know, Abundant Earth is located on Whidbey Island, mm-hmm. and which is, what, a couple hours away-ish. And they now have, like, a teaching room where you can go try out stuff, and they're going to have classes, but they mm-hmm. also are a mill.
Yes. So they're a mill, and they
have their own yarn.
They have their own yarns. They used to do bigger commercial projects. I mean, they still do. But they now have periods where they'll allow people to bring smaller quantities yeah. in to have the mill spun, which is really nice. So
you can follow them on Instagram. And yeah. they usually, that's how you know. Or I think they have a newsletter, but I follow them on Instagram. Yeah. They'll be like, this is the time to bring your things in. Like,
right.
So you can get your own yarn made. Mm-hmm.
And then, but her yarns are amazing. They're
yes, they
just
are.
Some of my favorites. That Speckles yarn that she did with Local Color is still, I think, my favorite yarn I've ever knit with.
Pretty.
So fantastic. Yeah, so that's all my knitting.
Cool.
What you up to? Making little sockses.
Yes. I'm working on a pair of kids socks in 2x2 rib for charity. And it's a Dream in Color smooshy.
Oh.
From the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
At a partial skein. I don't even remember what this color is.
You are
is.
Knitting that at a really firm gauge. Seems like.
It relaxes a lot when you
yeah.
block it.
I just.
Also, the ribbing makes them seem itty bitty when
yeah,
they're.
Yeah, that's true.
They're kind of normal size.
That's something else that I did this last weekend. I had a dye day at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I dyed some smushy that I had in my stash that I got at the stash sale. That was the shade Good Luck Jade, which is kind
that's
of
a weird
gray
color.
Green. And it just, like, every time I look at it, I'm like, it's too drab. I mean,
kind of sad.
And I love, you know, I love a drab green. Like, a murky green. Like, I'm fine with that. But it was just too, it was too gray. It was too dull. So I actually over-dyed it and added, like, a lot of blue to it. And it definitely, like, perked it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I haven't figured out what I'm going to do with it yet. But I guess mine, since it was just washed, looks really, like, big and fluffy. And that's why I was thinking.
Yeah,
like,
no, this one's been in
a
cake for a long time.
Firm.
So I'm working on this. And then realized I'd only knit the first of the Sock Society socks.
Oh, yeah.
So I am working on Samphire socks by Helen Stewart as well.
That's one of the two pairs that I actually finished.
Yeah. So I'm
my cliff walk have been on the needles since I went to London.
I'm just about at the heel turn, and I'm using also older stash that's been around for a long time. It's Hazelnuts Artisan Sock, in like a bright reddy color. I don't know what color it is because it's been around for so long. But those are fun. The ribbed ones I work on, they're like my bust knitting, but I'm super close to finishing the foot. So, I'm just going to finish them and then cast on new plain ones for the bus.
Cool.
So, and then the Samphire socks, which are patterns, so I'm working on them at home. And then the Inara wrap by Amber O'Brien, which I haven't really touched. I was adding, like, a color a week for a while, and now it's just been sitting. So I kind of want to get to the... I got 5 colors, and I'm at the halfway point, because I have 10 colors total. So I have one more color. We'll be halfway done, and then I think that'll boost my momentum.
Over the hump.
Yeah.
Downhill slope.
Yeah, it's not like it's a difficult pattern or anything. It's just, like, I have had a lot of stuff going on. So just those 3 things, but I finished 4 things. Mm-hmm. So I knit Turion by Linda Dubeck from Pom Pom issue 18. It's a mitten, a worsted weight mitten that is in reverse stockinette, and it has a few rows knitting that go up toward the back, on the back of the hand, that go up and then end in, like, big baubles.
Uh-huh.
So I knit those. They're super fast. Mm. It's hard for me to explain it because it's, like, reverse stockinette, but then it's got this kind of, like, I don't know, like, flower bud kind of dealy happen on the back of the hand.
We'll link it for you. You can find it on the show notes.
Yeah. And the Alaskan Pullover by Einar Birkenbaeva, and that is for my nephew for Christmas. And I knit, like, the 1.5 size. I think my gauge is a little off. It was in between. So it's a little top-down raglan and garter stitch that has, like, a split neck, and then across the chest, after you divide for the sleeves, there's, like, a flip stitch pattern in a contrast color. And then it's finished in garter stitch, but it has, like, a little curved hem that's really cute. So it's a little shorter in the front and longer in the back. And then you make a twisted cord, and you exit through the neckline, and you finish it with tassels, like, tiny little tassels. Mm-hmm. So it's decorative. And that matches the contrast color band that's on the sleeve and the chest. There's also instructions for a zipper, if you don't want to put the cord.
Oh, yeah.
So I knit that. It was really fast. I knit it in Kelborn Woolen Scout, and, like, in camel color. And then I used Brodo Ultra Alpaca. I'm a little froggy, too.
No, we're, like, it's catching. Sorry.
Yeah. Brodo Ultra Alpaca in, like, a foxy red color. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, camel and fox color. It turned out really cute. I like it. It's a little oversized, so he'll be able to grow into it. I already sent, like, a sweater and a hat and stuff in September, so, yeah. And Einar Birkenbaeva is the same person who designed the Astragal sweater that I knit last time, that was in the fall pom-pom, that has, like, the little leaf motif cropped.
Okay. Yep. Got it.
Guy.
Yes.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
I'll also link it in the show notes.
Thank you. I knit 2 sweaters for me. I knit the
Is that all?
Yes. Well, one took 5 days because it's on, like, size 10 needles, and that's the Felix Pullover by Amy Christophers. I used Hinterland Range. I can't remember if I talked about this last time.
I don't think you did.
I don't think so, because Ravelry said I finished it in November. So it was after we recorded, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I used Hinterland Range that I bought at Knit City. And you use, like, size 10 or 10 and a half needles, and it's a top-down, oversized, boxy raglan, and the raglan is done with, like, a little lace pattern. It's a very popular pattern on Ravelry. Mm-hmm. I knit the third size, so I had, like, 3 inches of positivities, but she suggests 6 or 7. What I would say is, like, fine for me not wanting a ton of positive ease, but I think that if you're in the larger sizes, that it really only gives you 57 with 0 inches would be the biggest size. Amy, add 4 sizes. That's what I'm saying. I know there's, like, a lot of discussion about adding more sizes to people, and I think the oversized style that people are like, oh, I don't need to add as much because you don't have to have that much ease. But if you're suggesting, like, 6 or 7 inches of positive ease, then you need to grade for a bust that would fit, you know, the biggest size plus that amount.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Erin. I just want to pop in here and say that after we recorded this episode, I went and looked at Amy's newer patterns, and she has released 4 patterns since the Felix pullover, and they all are graded up to like the 60 to 62 or 63 inch bust range, and that includes 2 inches of positive ease. So she is definitely working on it, but we are also going to continue this conversation in a minute. And I talk about the Craft and Yarn Council Association's grading charts, and they go from a 2830 chest to a 6062. And there are 2 other kind of grading charts that I've heard of. The American Society for Testing and Materials, they have a plus size chart that is 14 women's to 40 women's. And Yozolda has sizing charts that are for free on her website that are a 2-inch grade between sizes, and those range from 30 to 60 inches. There are definitely more charts out there. These are the ones that I've run into just doing a search for them. And I think it's important to acknowledge designers who are adding the extra sizes like Amy has. So thank you very much. The next sweater I talk about is Ink and Brass, and I misquote some numbers. So the listed bust is 31 to 52, and the actual finished bust is 34 to 54.7.
That's my issue with the other sweater I knit, Ink and Brass by Danny Sunshine. So her size range would be 31 to 52, but she suggests like 3 to 4 inches or something, 2.5 to 4 inches of positive ease.
Oh, so
but it's not
really
graded.
Her biggest is like only then a 48.
Yeah, which she calls a 3X, and that matches a 54-inch chest is a Craft Yarning Council of America 3X. But
there's no ease.
But then there would be no ease. So CYCA has guidelines for up to 5X, and I just feel like people should just do that. That's a 60-inch bust. That's, I think, what everyone who is asking for more inclusive sizing is like, CYCA has this as their guidelines. Please use it.
Yeah. No, I mean,
and working on the magazine, like, I know how much work that is to add that in. It's not like, oh, just do the math and plug it in, you're good to go. It's like,
yeah,
also reformatting the pattern and like retesting it. And
well, yeah, because it is a problem to have. I mean, I've found even in, you know, I'm generally, you know, somewhere in like the, you know, higher end of the middle of sizes on patterns.
Yeah.
But that the problem is that people tend to grade patterns by just making everything bigger proportionally, and the problem is that just because you have big boobs doesn't mean your skeleton is bigger. Your shoulders don't get wider just because you have a tummy.
Yeah.
You know, your arms don't get longer just because you have big boobs.
I think that idea,
and that's a problem. So that you can't. It does take a. I guess what I'm really trying to say is that it does take more expertise and more understanding of how to properly size a larger size. It's not as simple as, oh, you just needed to do the math on this other size. Because if you do that, you end up with plus size sweaters that have armholes that are 4 inches too long and shoulders that are much too wide and all, you know, it's not a simple proportion. So I appreciate that people aren't just slapping together a bunch of numbers and throwing it out there. There is expertise involved. It's not just as simple as like just throwing it together.
Right.
So, yes. So there's a downside to people who are like, oh, I can just size this up to whatever without considering those things as well. So,
But like having like a base, even with for people who have fit issues, which should be everybody has a fit issue.
Right.
Cause nobody's the same.
We're not all
out of having just like that base kind of size to work with and to be able to make your own adaptations and modifications and stuff is like a really great place to start for everyone.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, but Ink and Brass is a top-down raglan, not my normal style. Both of these are top-down raglan, so that's not my normal thing.
Yeah.
But I love both of them. I actually just trimmed the ends on Ink and Brass before you came over.
Sorry, did you say what yarn you used for that one?
Hazelnuts Artisan Sock.
Oh, yes.
That I bought at Wendy's Open House.
Oh, wow. You already knit a sock weight sweater?
I sure did.
Damn. Okay.
I used size 4 needles
which is for the body. Your go-to needle.
Apparently.
The sweater size.
Apparently. And a size 2 for the neck. And the cuffs and the bottom. So it's like twisted rib for the edgings. And then it has a really clever short row to raise the back neck that takes exactly one stripe.
Oh,
so okay. It meets up really nicely in the front.
Good.
Yeah, yes. It's very clever. I was like, oh, this is so tidy. It made me really happy. but it's just, you know, wide stripes. I think I bought 2 skeins of Dulce de Leche, which is like a caramely golden yellow, and then 2 skeins of Wood Smoke, which is like a gray with brown overtones. Mm-hmm. And I have some of each left, so I didn't use all of it. And it's oversized, and the sleeves are kind of long. I feel it's weird. Like, this is like a Kurt Cobain sweater, like the kind of the slouch of it. So the only thing I have to try it on again and see what happened to the length of it. I feel like visually I need to make the bottom hem deeper because I did the same number of rows, but because it's a smaller needle, it's shorter and it doesn't look quite right.
Oh.
And I have enough yarn to pull out the bind off, and add a little bit of length.
Yeah.
But it's like a lot of stitches because of the fingering weight. Yeah. I'm like, is this okay or is it going to annoy me? So
yeah,
I think I'm going to wear it and see how I feel.
It's funny. I keep finding, like, you know, I spent years and years learning how to make, you know, somewhat fitted sweaters that mm-hmm. would, you know, match my figure and blah, 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 blah. And now in the morning when I'm dressing for work, what I really want are just like looser, easier. Like mm-hmm. the other morning I was just like going through all my sweaters and it was like, I didn't have any, like, just really simple. Actually, that's sort of what this white one, this one I'm knitting right now is going to be. It's just a long, really simple cardigan. But it's like, you know, it's like we fall in love with patterns and color work and texture and mm-hmm. all this stuff. And it's like, when I'm dressing for work, it's like, I don't necessarily need a sweater that's like a whole epic journey of its own. Like, you know, sometimes you just want something, a layer to put over what you're already wearing.
Yeah.
To
tell you, like, one, I'm similar to that one I've been wearing a ton now, but it had a little bit of a break, and now it's back, is Pomme de Pin, also by Amy Christopher's, because it's, like, an all-over pineapple lace pattern, but it's, like, cozy and a little oversized, and it's in, like, a good, like, blue-green color, and it's just, like, super easy to throw over, and it's, like, cozy to wear, but it's sport weight, so it's not super hard to wear under a jacket and stuff. So I read so many books because I was on vacation. Oh. So why don't you talk for a little bit?
I actually have books to talk about.
Okay.
Not all actually read, but So book club book was for last month was Story of Your Life and Other Stories by Ted Chiang. He is a Seattle-based sci-fi writer. Most people know him because the Story of Your Life that's in this collection is what the movie Arrival was based on. Mm. I only got around to reading 2 of the stories in the book. And so I read that one. Or I read one of them previously. But I read that one and another one that's called Understand. And they're both kind of, they were interesting together. I think a lot of the stories in the book, even though some of the ones I didn't read, have a lot to do with the idea of what happens when you gain knowledge. And in Story of Your Life, it's gaining this understanding of these aliens that come to Earth, or attempting to gain an understanding of these aliens that come to Earth. And through learning their language, perceiving the world differently. And in Understand, it's about a guy who gets an experimental drug for a brain injury that makes him super smart, like the smartest person in the world, and how he begins to see and understand the world differently because of that. They go in very different directions. They're interesting. We agreed, like, He has amazing ideas. I just don't think he's the most gifted writer. I almost feel like it would be better if he was writing screenplay outlines and then having someone else who is better at dialogue and character writing that part of it, because he just does, his characters don't have a very distinctive sound or feel to them. He doesn't have very many women in his stories, and the ones that he does don't sound any different than the men in his stories. Mm. So, but again, I was sort of a slacker. I only read part of it, so I'm sorry. But it's because I was obsessed with finally finishing The Goldfinch, which I was listening to in an audiobook, all 32 hours of it. It's the Donna Tartt novel about a boy whose mother is killed in a terrorist attack in a museum when he's 13 years old, and the aftermath in his life, and in particular his connection with this painting of The Goldfinch that they went to go see at the museum. It is, wonderfully written. Like, the characters are so fully fleshed out. And so, the main character is so frustrating. It's like, this boy never made the correct choice in his life. Aww. Like, everything he does, you're like, no. And he is, very sadly in a position where he doesn't have people looking out for him. And it's just like turn after turn after turn in his life where you just want to be like, Theo, no. And as an adult, he never makes the right decision, and he just never makes the right decision. So sometimes I would just have to stop, and like, I couldn't listen to it for a couple of days. And I think also, like, as the mother of two young men, I maybe was projecting a little bit too much onto him, but what a book. Like, it was just incredible. Really amazing, amazing kind of story. And then right now I'm listening again to an audiobook of Less, and I forget the author's name. I think it's Andrew Greer. It's won all these book awards, and it's everywhere. And it's the story of a... I'm feeling this really hard. It's a story of a writer just before he turns 50 who decides to have this year where he just accepts all these invitations that he'll be traveling so he won't be around when his ex gets married. And so you're getting him kind of all kind of traipsing around the world, going to Mexico City and going to Germany and Marrakesh. It was kind of interesting. The dedication to the book was to Daniel Handler, who is Lemony Snicket.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of feels like if Where'd You Go, Bernadette had been written by Lemony Snicket. Like, trying for this sort of dry, witty, slightly dastardly kind of... Not dastardly, that's not the right word for it, but like... A little mean-spirited approach mm-hmm. to the author. I mean, the fact that his name is Arthur Less, and he's referred to throughout the whole thing as Less, Less, Less. And, you know, it's just this, it's like kind of the book is always looking for an opportunity to kind of cut him off at the knees. And I don't know, like, it thinks it's very clever. I'm not sure I completely agree, although I'm going to do find myself like kind of chuckling to some of the things. To me, it feels very... trivial, and I don't know if it's going to eventually build to something more meaningful. But as someone who is also staring, like, getting ready to see my 50th birthday, I'm like, get it together, man. It's not that big a deal.
Also, like, if you have issues with your ex-wife getting remarried or whatever, maybe go to therapy. Or ex-boyfriend. Maybe go to therapy?
Yeah. No, it's...
Instead of, like, you know... running away around the world.
Yeah. So. But, you know, that would be a very interesting book.
I mean, therapy sessions could be interesting.
That's true, yeah. No, I don't think anything about him would be that interesting is the problem. It's like, no. He's got to be in interesting places and situations because he is otherwise kind of bland is sort of the point, or seems to be the point right now, at least, that maybe he'll be less bland. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too. It's, like, it's definitely trying... It has a lot to say about the depiction of gay men in literature, because the character is an author, and his, and a lot of his sort of success and fame is tied to the fact that he was the lover of a Pulitzer winning poet, who's, you know, sort of this American icon of poetry. There's a lot of people who don't, a lot of people in the gay community who don't care for his depiction of gay characters.
Oh.
This is all within the world of the novel. So it is kind of interesting, like, that he's kind of definitely not, the author of the book that I'm listening to is not, trying very hard to, you know, he's not worried about making the character likable and, you know, or, you know, making all the characters super likable, because the whole point is that, you know, there's a whole world of people out there and they don't all have to be one kind of person, and that's sort of a hallmark of maybe not very developed literature around gay themes is having them, everybody be like a perfect person so that you'll forgive them for being gay. Anyway, so it's amusing, but I just don't feel like it's very deep.
Okay.
That's where I am.
Okay, so.
So, all right.
Whew. I think, yeah, okay. Let me get started. I read Zone 1 by Colson Whitehead, which last time I read The Nickel Boys.
Yes.
And that was amazing. This one is totally different. It is a zombie apocalypse story. I read it on vacation. It was fine reading. It's got an interesting narrative style. It's about this young man who is part of, like, a cleanup crew in Manhattan because they're trying to, like, you know, clean it up and kind of resettle areas.
So zombies are messy.
Well, you know, they're like...
Aren't they?
They created, like, this barrier, and so they're cleaning up the part that is kind of cut off. And then they find out that there's some other entry in, and they're trying to figure out how to stop more zombies from coming in. But it's not really about that. It's more about this young man and his personal experience, his life experiencing a zombie apocalypse. So it's a little bit of a twist. It's not like, he went here, he did that, he found these people. It's kind of told through flashbacks, but related to the current things that are happening. So you don't really get, like, a lot of detail about, like, how the zombie thing happened and, you know, that kind of timeline. It's all just in the aftermath. I really liked it, and I want to read more by Colson Whitehead. So recommend that. You were just talking about depictions of gay men. So I read The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay, and I cried at the end. It is so good. So it's like, it's two timelines, two stories that are connected by some of the same characters. One takes place in Chicago in 1985 during the height of the AIDS epidemic, right? The main character in that story, Yale, works at an art gallery for one of the schools there.
Oh.
And he's trying to...
I wonder if he worked at mine.
I don't remember what it was. But he's kind of through a relationship with somebody in his circle. He has the opportunity to get this really big acquisition while also dealing with all of his friends dying, right? So that's that 1985 timeline. Then the 2015 one is the friend who helped Yale get that acquisition. It's her going to Paris to try and find her daughter who was in a cult. Ooh. And has possibly left the cult. So it was like...
All your favorite things.
All my favorite things.
Sadness, cults.
Yeah, it was great. It was so good. My friend Lauren recommended it to me, and she's like, this has a cult in it. But it's like so much more than just about a cult, you know. I really enjoyed it, and I highly recommend it, and it'll make you cry. Yeah, it's just really, really good. And I feel like it really, like, I felt like the 2015 cult story was quite a bit secondary to the 1985 story. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, like, kind of reading the current story faster than, and, like, trying to savor the 1985 story. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really well done. So, really recommend that. And another book with a cult in it called The Sacred Lies of Minnow Bligh by Stephanie Oakes is about a girl who has escaped a cult in, where was it? Montana. And they've been living out off grid since she was like 6 or 7. And the prophet for the cult had cut her hands off. She escapes and then ends up like almost beating a guy to death, a young man to death, because she thinks that he, it's unclear exactly what she thinks, but she's traumatized and he ends up, it turns out, has severe mental health issues and was not taking his medication. So he was acting really weird and she thought it was connected to the cult.
Oh.
So it's like following her after she gets sent to juvenile detention and kind of figuring her crap out. And then you get the backstory of the cult. It was very good. I liked it. I mean, it's totally depressing.
I was going to say.
Totally depressing. But it's definitely a page turner.
Yeah.
So I liked that one. And I read The Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo, which is not my normal, like, genre. It has to do with, like, magic. This girl has been recruited by a secret society at Yale. I get those fancy colleges mixed up, so maybe it's the other one. No, I think it's Yale. So, like, whatever, Skull and Bones or whatever. Is that right? I used to know all this secret society stuff.
Is it in New Haven?
Anyway, she gets recruited. Like, she had some horrible thing happen. She's in the hospital recovering from it. And this guy comes in to see her and is like, oh, hey, we think you're, like, this medium. Why don't you come work for us? We'll, like, take care of this police situation. We'll say you got in because she was, like, doing, she was into art. Let's say got in on an art scholarship. But you have to help us with all this stuff. So, like, 8 different secret societies that have to do with different types of magic. And then her job in her society is to, like, help oversee different rites that they do to make sure that they're following the rules. So, but there's a murder. So it's like a murder mystery with, like, magic stuff, which sounds really weird. It is pretty weird.
Now that I'm saying it out loud.
Like, the murder mystery part is really interesting. I could care less about the magic stuff. That's fantasy is not really my thing.
Yeah.
So it was just like an odd combination of the genres. I mean, I enjoyed it. I finished the whole book. It's on a peak pick, so it must be really popular. But, like, if that piques your interest, if you're into fantasy or you're into murder mystery, then, like, this would be the book for you. And I'm reading The Witches Are Coming by Lindy West, which is some old stuff and some new stuff.
It's
like a compilation.
Speaking of Lindy West, saw her on Saturday night, because Wes and I went to go see the Seattle premiere of her husband's play. I have to pause for a moment. His name is Ahamefule Oluo. He's Ijeoma Oluo's brother.
Okay.
So she was there, too. She was there, and Lenny West was there, and Macklemore was there. I just walked by him on my way to the... Yeah, it was like kind of a Seattle... Well, it was funny because I follow her on Instagram, and this guy walked by me as we're walking in, and I'm like, how do I know him? And I had to think on it really hard, and then I was like, oh, it's her boyfriend, who's a musician in his own right, and her brother's musician. Anyway, the show is called Susan. It was very interesting, but Sorry, you said Lindy West, and then I was like, I just saw her.
Right, so if you follow Lindy West, if you watch Shrill, I think that's how a lot of people know her by now. But she's straight for The Stranger here in Seattle. It's good. I'm just a little bit into it. It's the first... the next section piece I have to read is Adam Sandler funny? I would say no. I'll see what she has to say about it.
That's funny. Wes and I were just having a whole conversation about Adam Sandler.
I think everyone has a conversation about him. Well, no, he keeps doing movies.
We had it like just before I came here because he's in this new movie by the Safdie brothers called Uncut Gems, which is apparently really good.
It's an A24 film.
Yes.
Which is the only reason I would see it. But Adam Sandler.
It's apparently really good, though. And then Wes is saying that apparently it's people keep describing it as very anxiety-inducing. That you're like, but he said, you know, maybe it'd be worth going to see it just to watch him get the shit beaten out of him in a movie. And I'm like, I don't feel that strongly about him, but you know, anyway, sorry, we were just having a conversation before I got here.
And then the last thing I'm reading is Starvation Heights by Greg Olson, I covered in an episode of My Favorite Murder about Dr. Linda Hazard and My Neighbors Are Very Loud. Okay, I'm going to keep going.
Starvation Heights.
Yeah.
Dr. Hazard.
Dr. Linda Hazard, who created her own brand of killing people by starving them to death.
In the guise of health.
Called The Fasting Cure, I believe it is. I'm only a little bit of the way in because my Lindy West book is a peak pick, so I'm trying to finish it really quickly. Linda Hazard.
She was local.
Yeah, she was in Seattle.
And that was like turn of the century?
Yeah.
Or early 1900s?
Early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And then her sanatorium, whatever you want to call it, killing fields, were over in Olalla, which is like on the other side of Ashland.
Yeah.
So, she told people she was going to cure them because... Yeah, she's going to cure them through fasting, which ended up killing the majority of them. Like, you would go 40 days without food. You'd basically have, like, some fresh squeezed orange juice, some reduced tomato broth, and water, and then tons of enemas.
Yeah.
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 There you go. So it's very depressing. I'm just a little bit of the way in, but already, like, one of the sisters has died. It, like, it starts off with the two sisters that they talk about. They're, like, super...
Two wealthy British. Heiresses. Oh, yeah. British, that's right. I was like, British they came from somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
Yes, who fall under her spell and starve to death.
Yeah, one of them has already died. So, and it's, like, 60 pages in or something. Which brings me also to... The second season of The Dream has started, and it's all about the wellness industry, and I'm so excited.
Oh, this is a podcast. The podcast.
Yes. So this is a tie-in for that. I want everyone to listen to it.
The first season was about multi-level marketing.
And pyramid schemes, and it's fan-freaking-tastic. Okay. And everyone should also listen to season two about wellness. There's only one episode out right now, but it's good.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's talking to her aunt who sells those oils, the essential oils. And her grandma also does it. And they're like, give her this, there's like this pseudo dictionary about what all the oils will do. But everything is written in a way where it's like, we think that this does this.
Right, because they can't actually make medical claims about it.
So it's really interesting so far. And they're also going to talk, they're going to cover all kinds of stuff. Ooh, Very exciting.
Cool. All right. I don't want to take forever on this, but I did watch a couple of interesting things. First of all, saw three whole movies in the movie theater. Woo. We went to go see Pain and Glory, which is the latest film by Pedro Almodovar. I am a huge fan from way, way back. This one stars Antonio Banderas, who has been in many, many, many Almodovar films dating back to like the late 80s. It's kind of fun because in the early films, he was always playing like the young hottie, a hustler, the twink. And now he's playing sort of the stand-in for Pedro Almodovar. He's playing an aging film director who's had to retire due to health issues. And so it's set in Madrid and just involves the people in his life and his, and your, it's sort of interwoven with recollections of his childhood. Really beautifully done. I enjoyed it a lot. I love Almodovar as a filmmaker. And this one was, if you've seen a lot of Almodovar films, I think you just sort of see a lot of, layers and references in there that gets very meta. Really wonderful storytelling. I enjoyed that a lot. The next day we went to go see Parasite, which is the new, film by, Bong Joon-ho, a South Korean filmmaker. It is amazing. Like, it is completely incredible. It's sort of like, it's like a little bit of Get Out mixed with, I don't even know what. It's about this, young man from a very destitute, desperate family, who gets a job as an English tutor for a very, very wealthy family, and how he and his family begin to insinuate themselves into the lives of this family, in ways that are so, twisted and sinister. Like, it's really dark. It does get kind of violent at some points. But it is just like, it's so, I was knitting while I was watching it. And like, that hat is at such a firm gauge. Cause I was like, I had a backache for like 2 days after seeing this movie. I was so like knotted up with tension watching it. It is very, very smart and very, it's just fascinating. It's so well done. It's just like pitch perfect. The look of it is amazing. The acting is amazing. The storytelling is incredible. Highly recommend. And then for Thanksgiving, we went to go see Knives Out, which is a new Rian Johnson film that has sort of this bizarre all-star cast, because it's got, like, Chris Evans in it.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig, but it also has, like, Don Johnson. Like, I have questions. And Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. Like, so the story is about, it's a wealthy writer, patriarch of the family, is Christopher Plummer, who has died under maybe mysterious circumstances, maybe not. And his whole family is sort of brought in to talk to the police. And the detective is Lakeith Stanfield, my new, like, movie crush. Yeah. Love him. He's speaking great. Of Get Out. Love him. He's great. But it's just this really interesting cast and very funny. It's not, it's a PG-13 film, so I've been trying to stress to people that it is not, like, gross or violent, and it's appropriate, I'd say, for, like, teens. I wouldn't take, like, little kids to see it, because, you know, it's about someone who's died violently, but for grown-ups, I would say, like, I had friends who thought it was, like, a horror movie or something, mm-hmm. And it's not.
See, I just heard about the vomiting, so I was like, oh, PG-13, really?
That's a very minimal part of it.
There's vomiting in it, so if you're a sympathetic vomit.
Yes.
I haven't seen it, but
I am, though. Like, I am 100% the person there with the sympathy hurl, but it's not like that in the movie. It's not.
Oh, no, but I heard about the sweater. The sweater is all over.
Yeah, the sweater is all everywhere. Chris Evans is wearing this beaten-up Aaron sweater that everyone keeps talking about. But anyway, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. It's just a very, if you enjoy, like, a really tightly twisted kind of murder mystery, you know, it's like it's like an Agatha Christie, but, like, you know, in a very fun, snappy sort of way. I saw Project Nim, which I'd been meaning to see for ages, which is a documentary about Nim, who was a chimp who in the 70s, a researcher decided, like, let's raise a chimp like a human and see what happens. But without really any protocols, without any idea how this was going to work out. And basically he just gave a baby chimp to this woman who he had had a previous sexual relationship with, which is a theme in his life. Like, every woman who shows up in this film who worked for him at some point had a sexual relationship with him. Yeah. But he just, like, gives her this baby chimp to take home and breastfeed and raise like a baby. And of course he, well, so it's interesting because, I mean, the story about Nim, I think, has been pretty well known for a long time. And I was like watching it going, wait, I know this story already, but it's because I'd read the book years ago, a fiction book that's called We're All Completely Beside Ourselves, which is a fictional version of a young woman who had been raised in a family that had taken in a chimp where her, in that version, the parents were the researchers, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so then Nim gets passed on to like other researchers who also don't have any kind of protocols. They just like, it's like no one knows what they're doing. They're just all sort of winging it. And the whole idea was like, what would happen if we raise this chimp like a person? And can we teach this chimp language? So they're trying to teach him how to sign and doing all these things with him. But, you know, what happens to a chimpanzee? They reach sexual maturity when they're, I don't know, 5 years old or 6 years old, whatever it is. And they're big and strong and they get like really aggressive and they're not safe to be around. Even if you raise them like a child, they're a chimp. And so, I mean, I guess I knew a lot of fragments of the story about the research that was done with this poor, poor chimp. But what I felt thought was interesting, I was trying to think, this has been driving me crazy. I feel like there's a word for this, but that I feel like he and this telling of his story really is more of a reflection of the people around him. Like everyone around him, like you sort of see their true selves in the way they talk about or interacted with this poor creature. And so it really, to me, was about like all of these really messed up people who had the hubris to think that they could just do this thing without really thinking it through at all. And yeah, so it's just sort of all these people that you just want to kind of line them all up and knock their heads together. But it was very interesting to watch. Again, it was one of these things where like, I knew a bit about the story. You know, there's been a lot of debunking recently about how much animals that were in this sort of situation, like Coco, most people know about the gorilla who like quote unquote learned to sign, you know, how much are they really communicating? And then I think we want to believe in that, but then we're also, you know, anyone who owns a dog knows that dogs will learn how to do whatever it takes to, or, you know, even any kind of pet you have will learn how to read you and to do what they need to do in order to get the result they want.
Yeah.
And if the thing they need to do is to make this particular hand gesture, they'll do it. But are they really using language, or is it any different from a dog walking over and scratching the door when it wants to go pee? So there's a lot of debate about it anyway, but it was, I thought it was a very interesting documentary. I also watched the most recent season of The Crown, which I liked a lot, but, still, speaking of people you want to knock heads, like all the men, just knock all their heads together. But then we started watching Watchmen.
Oh, yeah, HBO. No, we were watching Watchmen.
Holy crap.
That's so good.
But this is my question after watching Watchmen and seeing Knives Out is who decided Don Johnson should be getting work? Like, when did he start acting again? Like, I just, like, where did he come from all of a sudden? But Watchmen, so good. Not so what good. I was expecting.
That's amazing.
So I thought it was going to be, like, the story from the comic book. But, I mean, Aaron's watched it, so... But for you, the audience, if you haven't seen it yet, it is set in the present after the events. I mean, the comic book kind of wraps up, it's late 80s it was written.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's, you know, imagining a timeline that proceeds from the end of that comic to 2019, and very specifically focusing on race and law enforcement in the U.S. And it is
amazing.
So far really incredible, really smart, has a lot to
say. I have no
say.
Idea. Yeah. So we haven't watched the most recent episode.
I've only watched the first three, four.
Like, I still don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of know more, but, I mean... You definitely know more than from the first episode. Being like, well, how is this going to wrap up? What the hell are they going to do? It's so good.
Yeah, and it ties to, at least from the episodes I've seen, to a number of historical events.
Yeah.
Like real historical events.
Like the Tulsa, Oklahoma riots.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just a very, I mean, immediately is a really interesting extension of what happens from the comic, where this idea that, these masked vigilantes are outlaws and are, should not exist. But now within the world of this new storyline that in order to keep police and their families safe, they need to wear masks to protect their identities. It's really interesting. Visually really interesting too. And, yeah, I have no idea where it's going, but it's just like dark and creepy.
And the music is amazing. And it reminded me of the Westworld music a lot. And Noah's like, oh no, it's Trent Reznor.
I know what I was going to say. We were watching it and Wes goes, after like 20 minutes, Wes goes, well, if Trent Reznor didn't make the music for this, someone owes him money. And then I like looked it up. I was like, yeah, it's Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's Damon Lindelof, so I'm like, he better have a clearer idea of where this is going than on Lost, because if he pulls a Lost on me,
watch Lost, so
I'm still mad about Lost.
I'm not mad about it because I didn't
watch. All right.
Anyway, it's really good.
Yeah,
that was excellent. At the top of my list. So,
what else are you watching?
I'm watching Making It, the new season, which I'm enjoying more than the last one. They've kind of laid off, like, you have to monetize everything.
Oh, thank God.
I mean, I'm only, like, a few episodes in, but last time it was just like, this is how you make it a business, but, like, not everybody who makes stuff makes it a business.
Or judging things based on, like, this is really trendy on Etsy right now.
Like, yeah, which there's a little bit of it, but not as much as the last season, so far, anyway. And then kind of in a similar vein, I'm watching a show on Netflix called Repair Shop, which is like a British show that is like a repair shop in the middle of nowhere. It seems it's like Bake Off where there's just like a tent in the middle of nowhere. And people bring in like their family heirlooms to get fixed. Aww. And so they like tell us it's very heartwarming and it's like the same kind of feel as Bake Off, like all the different repair people are like specialists in their field. So there's like a woodworking guy and a guy who fixes clocks. And there's like a lady who does like painting and fine paint restoration. And they kind of all like have their own separate projects, but work with each other to like restore these things. And it's just like very sweet. And Noah was super into it because the first episode they fix an accordion. He's like, oh, cool. And he's like, hey, because it's only like, they fix like three things in each episode and they're only 30 minutes long. So he was kind of upset. I'm like, this is not the accordion repair show. Sorry.
You get one accordion per season.
But if you're looking for like something like nice to watch, like that's a really good one.
Aww.
I watched Mary, Queen of Scots with Saoirse Ronan, which I really liked.
And Margot Robbie's in it too.
Yes.
Yes.
I believe everyone knows the story.
She dies at the end. There are two queens. Only one survives.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. But it's really well done. I really enjoyed it. What I really like, I mean, the costumes were amazing, but also the cast is very diverse. They didn't go for like, this is a historical film. Everyone has to be white. They were like, her ladies in waiting were like, all different kinds of ladies in waiting. And that's the same also goes to like all the lords and stuff that, that she was interacting with and Queen Elizabeth was interacting with. So, and it has more to do with the relationship of Elizabeth and Mary, like than it does with like the dudes, which I also appreciated. And I watched this four episode series on Netflix called Broken. So the first episode is about the cosmetic industry and that has a lot to do with black market cosmetics. And it was fascinating. Like kind of the whole idea is like, we believe that there's this, all this oversight and what is happening in these different industries. And there's like none. So they interviewed a girl who bought a Kylie Jenner knockoff lip kit on eBay, because people think that if you buy from Amazon or eBay, you're buying the real thing,
and you're not.
But you're not. They both use third-party distributors that are not checked. Nobody is, like, doing quality control on these people who are listing things for sale. And it had super glue in it, and she super glued her lips together. Oh. So that was in that first episode. Oh, yeah. Also how, like, police are cracking down on black market cosmetics, but then they just pop back up again.
Yeah.
So there was that one. The second episode is about, like, vaping and e-cigarettes. Yes. The third one is about IKEA, which I am now not shopping at because they Ooh. Annually use 1% of all the wood resources on the planet. 1%.
Wow.
And a lot, some of it they steal from national parks in, like, Romania.
Awesome.
So cool. It's like fast furniture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't feel, and there's also some other stuff with the owner, like how he is not paying taxes by creating all these smaller companies that make up IKEA. So, like, you know, death to billionaires. Thank you. And then the last one is
apologies to any billionaires who are listening.
Doubtful.
You don't want to alienate our big billionaire audience there.
Tell us how you really feel. The last episode is about plastics, which is also very depressing. Yeah, but the cosmetic one and the IKEA one, like, I don't smoke, I don't vape, whatever. But, like, those two were really interesting to me because, like, I buy makeup sometimes. I've purchased furniture at IKEA before.
I always had to just explain to people when I worked at Sephora, they would say, like, they wanted something natural for makeup. And it's like, there is no legal definition for natural.
Yeah.
You can, like, grind up an old TV and sell it as eyeshadow and call it natural. I mean, you'll get sued, but not because you called it natural.
Yeah.
You'll get sued if someone hurts themselves. But there's no definition of natural is meaningless. Yeah. Everything's being billed as natural, and it's like, there's no such thing.
They interviewed this dermatologist. She's like, you know, at a certain point, like 10 years ago, 8 years ago or whatever, she's like, I started seeing, like, all these skin problems I hadn't seen before, like contact dermatitis a lot, and people getting lots of styes and all this other stuff, and it's because people were buying makeup off Amazon or eBay or whatever that had, like, urine or construction glue or, like, whatever in it because it was black market, but they didn't know it and using it, and it was causing problems. So, not the most uplifting.
No.
But to end it on a funny note, I listened to this podcast on Wondery called Dirty John, which is, like, a true crime podcast. Now there's, like, a Netflix series about it, and I watched the first episode last night. It's so freaking terrible.
I thought it was Lifetime.
I don't know. It's on Netflix.
Okay. So it might be Lifetime. Because I think it kept getting advertised to me when I was watching. Because is it Eric Bana?
It's Eric Bana and Connie Britton.
Right,
and
it is
so crappy and hilarious. So if you want something to yell at your TV about and laugh about, then... And you like true crime, because bad stuff happens, because I know the story. But, like, it is so terrible, and I enjoy it.
All right, so some sort of algorithm recommended a TV show to me, and the algorithm obviously meant the information to go to you, not to me. Because the TV show is called Zomboat.
Oh, I watched it! It's so good! Oh, it's so good. Zomboat, I forgot about that, because I watched it before we went on vacation. I
tell Aaron about this.
Zombo is a British show that's, like, each episode is 20 minutes, and it's a zombie comedy about two sisters where there's an outbreak in Birmingham, I believe, and they're trying to, like, get to London, because the one sister actually, like, plays zombie video games, she knows all the zombie stuff, like, how to survive, and the way they're escaping is on one of those canal boats.
Narrowboat, right?
They go, like, 10 miles an hour.
Because they discovered that the zombies don't like the water, right? So you're safe if you're on the boat.
Yeah, so they're, like, chugging along, but all the zombies are just, like, walking by. It is really funny. And each episode's, like, 20 minutes long. It's on Hulu.
I will add one other thing that I've been watching on Hulu that's also 20 minutes long per episode and also really funny, which is Travel Man.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a in theory, it's a travel show with Richard Iowate, who most people know as Moss from the IT Crowd.
Noel Fielding's the new host.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Because he's a guest on, well, and he's a guest on it on one of the episodes. So that each season has like four or sometimes six episodes, but they're all like 22 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But Chris O'Dowd's on it, Noel Fielding.
And they have a guest.
Paul Rudd, Lena Dunham. Yeah, so it's Richard Iowate and then like one other person, and they'll go to Helsinki, but for just for 48 hours. But it's totally like, it's taking the whole idea of the travel show and kind of turning it on its head. It's not like really trying to be a like, this is how you want to do this. It's trying to find unusual things. Like they're always doing, like they always do a tour that's like a weird tour. Like you're driving these little mini cars.
Or you're in a tank.
Yeah, or you're in a tank in Moscow or, yeah, or St. Petersburg. I can't remember which one that was. Yeah, just, it's very silly. But so it's, you know, if you want something that you don't need to pay like a ton of, like maybe if you're doing a heavily charted knitting pattern and you want something on that's just sort of entertaining. But they do go to Lisbon.
Yeah, I watched that one.
And there's, they do a couple of different Spanish cities because they're, cause, so, because Wes and I are trying to think about where we'd like to go on vacation next year. And I'm like, ooh, maybe I'd like to go here or there. And then he's like, is it because you saw it on that show? And I was like, no.
Yes.
But yes, maybe a little bit. I was already thinking about it. But I, anyway. Okay.
Anyway, I have some editing to do because my loud neighbors.
You just snip all that out.
Yeah.
But so we will put show notes, as mentioned earlier, at doublenet.net. And you can join us on Ravelry at DoubleKnit Podcast Fans.
And we'll talk to you in the new year.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.